Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. This is tape number 343, side 2, August the 4th, 1978. If you hear some hesitancy in my voice as I read off the dates of these tapes, I'm always amazed at how fast the weeks pass. I just can't believe we're into August now, and I sort of gulp every time it's 1 week later. I've set too many goals for myself, and I just can't keep up with them, and it confuses me to see these months leap without having accomplished some of the things that I wanted to do at this time. I talked a little bit last week. I suggested that I would go into the subject of blackmail and political conspiracies and assassinations, because that is a very good tool to keep information from being exposed. Many people who argue against the conspiracy theory often say that it's impossible that so many people were involved because the story would have broken a long time ago. But when a man's reputation is at stake, when he has a law degree, a salary, he's worked his way up into the system, blackmail can keep him silent. This came out at the time of the Watergate arrest that John Mitchell had planned boats with prostitutes, and I've referred to them many, many times, down in Miami at the time of the political conventions. And blackmail, fixing these men up and photographing them and having sex, is important. They then let these men become heads of very important committees in Congress and then pull out these photographs. And that's why the men that go to Washington vote 180 degrees different than what they said they would do when they went there, because out come the pictures and they've been compromised sexually and other ways with payoffs and so forth. And as I say, the reputations are at stake, so blackmail is important. The blackmail element was important in the Alger Hiss case specifically, and through the widow of Meyer Zelig, the man who wrote Friendship and Fratricide, he passed away this year. His wife, Winnie, has let me have copies of FBI reports that, through the Freedom of Information Act, Meyer Zelig had obtained. And some of the information is just astounding, and I'm going to share it with you because you have not seen it or heard it. I don't believe you have. And one area that is so important for me as a researcher in wanting to know, for example, why Mark Lane holds the line, the antagonism towards me, the hatred, has to do, I believe, with the story that went out a long time ago and documented by the Freedom of Information Act, that J. Edgar Hoover and Lyndon Johnson had ordered the surveillance or the reports on the activities of various researchers, including Mark Lane, way back early when the Warren Commission was working. And unless we know what is in the hands of the congressional committees that continue these investigations, how they are also controlled, we cannot get the investigations out on the open road. Now, one of these documents from the FBI, dated February the 18th, 1949, has to do with J. David Whitaker Chambers and the trial against Alger Hiss. And this is what it says. There's reference made to my memorandum to you dated February the 15th, 1949, with regard to an envelope left by Mr. Chambers with the interviewing agents in the New York office of the FBI. You will recall that the envelope contained a statement by Chambers in which he admitted that he had been a homosexual. There is attached a photostatic copy of Chambers' statement. The New York office has advised that Chambers is being interviewed for the complete details as to the names, the dates, and the places involved in this statement, as well as the identities of all persons who may have knowledge of Chambers' activities along this line. Chambers will also be questioned relative to any homosexual leanings or any other persons mentioned by him in connection with this case, which would indicate that they participated in activities of this type either with Chambers himself or with other people. And Whitaker Chambers will be questioned concerning Alger Hiss. So Whitaker Chambers was not only confessing in an envelope to the FBI that he himself had been a homosexual, but he was passing on information about other people that had nothing to do with the Alger Hiss case, and he was a conduit of information about these people. At the time of Watergate, Tony Lasowitz had said that he ran call houses or houses where men could have various women drugged that worked for government agencies, and they were taken and seduced in front of cameras in these particular apartments that they thought they were legitimate lovers and so forth. So Whitaker Chambers was very useful in canvassing, I guess, the New York scene or the Washington scene in carrying over information about other people. There also is in this document a statement of Whitaker Chambers, which he said, I want to definitely state that there never was any physical relationship between, and the name is blacked out, and myself. This was a psychological homosexual relationship at the time, and I recognized it as such. The relationship between so-and-so, it's blanked, and myself was never physical nor psychologically homosexual. It was purely a friendship between two men. And then he says sometime between 1933 and 34, he met a young fellow who he took to his room and did have a homosexual relationship. And he hoped that the person didn't recognize his name in the news at the time that the Alger Hiss case was going on. But Whitaker Chambers was working for Henry Luce at Time magazine at the time that he was turning in as an informer information about other people who did have homosexual relationships. And I think the use of him as an informer is important. And I mentioned last week on the tape the list of 11 things which the House Select Committee or any committee should do in order to open up the investigation of John Kennedy. And I read to you Section 9 of that on planted evidence or documents. But Section 8 states, we don't know who the six researchers were, they were numbered as six, that Lyndon Johnson followed in 1966 to 67. One of them, mentioned among this group, has been very divisive, insulting, and exclusive from many of the other researchers, myself included, who have had valuable years of information to provide. If the House Select Committee does not know those persons who might possibly have been coerced or blackmailed into taking their line of investigation that they're now taking, they will be accepting only half of the story of the assassinations. The divisiveness among the researchers, thanks to the FBI, the COINTEL program, the CIA, has separated many truths from valuable facts. There is no single expert, and of course I was referring to Mark Lane, or a guru or a leader of the assassination investigation. The evidence and the documents should tell the entire story. Only when the entire story is kept from the public, and some of the researchers are doing the suppression, it becomes essential then to have the names of those persons that Lyndon Johnson and J. Edgar Hoover and assistant Marvin Watson were blackmailing. This list was supposed to be in the possession of Hale Boggs, but many more people have it. And I bring this up because when the House Select Committee was choosing their staff and the witnesses to call, Mark Lane made the statement that I will make sure that nothing that Mae Brussel has in terms of, this is 14, 15 years research, will ever get to that committee. He had that kind of power when the committee was set up to inform them that I was totally crazy and don't listen to what I have. And I've always asked the question, was Mark Lane blackmailed to take this role? And if he wasn't, let's see the list of who was photographed and copied of the so-called researchers, and then we'll understand perfectly their position and antagonism towards people that are trying to get to the truth. Now, one of the interesting items in the Alger Hiss papers that have been declassified was the name John Apt. John Apt was the attorney that Lee Harvey Oswald was told to call after he was arrested. He was given a name, and it was John Apt. And all these years, we were told to believe that John Apt was a leftist, a communist attorney. And this was one more link of Lee Harvey Oswald to the leftist assassination of the President of the United States. Well, now in the FBI papers dated June 26, 1945, this is the description of the same John Apt. John Apt worked formerly in the Agriculture Adjustment Administration. That's also where Alger Hiss worked. He was the Assistant Attorney General in the Antitrust Division, the Department of Justice. He then went on to be a counsel with La Follette's Civil Liberties Committee. That's where he got his leftist cover. Presently counsel to the Political Action Committee and the Amalgamated Clothing Workers Union. And then it goes on to say, John Apt is the husband of Jessica Smith, editor of Soviet Russia Today. So Apt took on the Russian cover of being a leftist after working in the Justice Department in the Antitrust Division as an assistant attorney general for the United States Department of Justice. Apt is important, and I then go on to another link of the Alger Hiss case to the John Kennedy assassination. Among these papers is a reference to a man named George Messerschmidt in these FBI papers. And this is interesting. It says there was an individual called George Messerschmidt, and they referred to a Chinese student that they worked with to referred as the Chinaman. Now, you remember that those people, maybe you know or don't know, who studied the John Kennedy assassination, George de Morenschild was always referred to as the Chinaman. That was the code word in his relationship. He was the CIA officer in control of Lee Harvey Oswald. But the Whitaker Chambers referred to George Messerschmidt, who Whitaker Chambers knew and described in the FBI reports as being absolutely clear on the Nazi question. And they refer to a Mr. Crane, who recalls that Whitaker Chambers made an index of different documents to be photographed. I'm going to Mr. Crane in a minute. But they referred to Mr. Messerschmidt and the Chinaman, and they said it will be recalled, this document said, that Mr. Crane believes Whitaker Chambers said their chief in the old days was named Felix, and that Alfred Tilden, their predecessor, was also known as Felix. And Mr. Crane recalled the correct first name of the Italian mentioned in a telegram as Guido, G-U-I-D-O. Now, these names are very important. They refer to a Colonel Bykov, B-Y-K-O-V, and a John Loomis Sherman. I'm just throwing these names out, and I'll go into them with you. When Colonel Vernon Walters was on the Ray Bream Show in Los Angeles talking about his book in the CIA, he referred George Morenschmidt and wants to say, he says Messerschmidt and Morenschmidt. And Ray Breen kept saying George de Morenschild, and he referred to him as Messerschmidt or Morenschmidt. And when George de Morenschild died, he died in the home of a Mrs. Charles Tilden down in Florida, this alleged suicide, which was actually a programmed murder. And he did use the name Chinaman. So putting these documents together was George Messerschmidt, George de Morenschild, working with Whitaker Chambers in this period where Whitaker Chambers, I suspected, of being a German spy. In the continuing inquiry, that's Penn Jones newspaper that came out May 22, 1978, it has an interview from the Dallas newspaper with Jean de Morenschild, and she tells how her husband came to this country and in the late 30s and went to work, George went to work in the War Department in an unknown manner. And in 1941, he was apprehended, the researchers all know this, as being a German spy down, the FBI followed him from New York down to Aransas Pass, the Gulf of Texas and Gulf of Mexico. And he was apprehended as being a German spy. And she said that he did work with the German underground, that he was a German spy, and by 1957, he had gone to Yugoslavia as a petroleum advisor. But de Morenschild was a German spy during this time period after World War II and even before in the 30s. He came to this country in the late 30s. So George de Morenschild could have been George Messerschmidt. And the Tilton family, we have to check out the relationship of Alfred Tilton and Charles Tilton and the code names of the Chinaman, because there's an overlap here that is important. They worked with Whitaker Chambers. You see, it isn't a far cry from the Whitaker Chambers story to the John Kennedy assassination, because Isaac Don Levine was the House the committee from the House Un-American Activities gentleman who took Whitaker Chambers and coached him to go to court and say that Alger Hiss was a communist spy. And it was Isaac Don Levine who went down to Dallas, according to the minutes of the Warren Commission meetings, to get a communist story out of Marina Oswald after the assassination. So looking at these documents of Messerschmidt, the Chinaman, and Tilden, was George Morenschild working with Whitaker Chambers, as was Isaac Dommelvine, and then go on to Leah and Marina in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. The name Guido that they use, it may be a common name, G-U-I-D-O. And this may be complicated for some of you new listeners who get this tape. You have to almost get the back tapes to follow what I'm saying. But I do want to give this out, and you can always take it and refer to it. They refer to their contact man as a man named G-U-I-D-O, an Italian whose first name is Guido. Last January the 8th, 1978, a story broke about a priest in Maryland by the name of Reverend Guido, G-U-I-D-O, John Carriage. I have it on the printed sheet for you, who raised money for the Palatine Fathers out of Baltimore, the headquarters. And this priest has been charged, that was in January, with an indictment of 61 counts of misappropriation of money through his church. People had donated nearly $1.4 million for the poor, and he had concealed another record of $15 million, this is in Maryland, for money to invest overseas, and he had made trips to Las Vegas and down to the Bahamas, and he took this money, donations that people were sending for the poor to his church, to Guido, and evidently this has been going on quite a long time, and invested it in trailer parks called the Orleans Inn, the Red Coconut Trailer Park in Southwest Florida, the Lauderdale by the Sea, and the Yellowbird. I think of the yellow pill I talked about on the other side, and that this woman had told me about the trailers and the trailer parks that were the locations of mind control programs. And this priest took money donated to him. He's a Roman Catholic, but he put up $54,000 to help finance the divorce of Maryland Governor Martin Mandel. And he, of course, is linked to the Spiro Agnew connections in Maryland. But this priest has put away in secret bank accounts $15 million. And at the time he was arrested, they said he didn't buy blue chip stocks, was putting them in trailer parks and down in the Bahamas and down in Florida, and made trips to Las Vegas, which is, of course, the heart of the conspiracies. Now, the hearings took place. He was indicted in January. And I have here Washington Post newspapers, so you can go to the library and copy them. May the 10th, 1978. The Washington Post has articles that Mr. Father Carriage, his name, C-A-R-I-C-H, but his first name is Reverend Guido, pleaded guilty to taking $2 million that he was caught with of donating to the poor, and he's been put on probation. All he has to do is 18 months probation and take care of the needs of the state penitentiary prisoners for a year, and he's off the hook. And yet the links of this Reverend Guido to the Palatine Brothers, this church organization, and funding also behind political operations in the governor and other people in Maryland, going to Vegas, Florida, money overseas and overseas banks, and using the church as a conduit, may be a very important link to the Alger Hiss story, because if Guido would be the same Guido that worked with Mr. Messerschmitt, and Messerschmitt was George D. Morenschild, we would have a very strong link to the Alger Hiss case, of the Alger Hiss case, to the John Kennedy assassination, that $15 million in secret bank accounts used by the church is important to remember for those of you that have the Torbett document, or those that don't. They claim that the DISC, the Defense Industry Security Command, uses church fronts to train schools of assassins that go all over the world to kill heads of states. Now, part of that training has to be mind programs, and here I have met this woman who told about trailer parks and the use of Sedona, and I know that's where Marina Oswald was taken. And all of a sudden, this whole case is hushed up about this reverend and the Palatine brothers, and he suddenly is given a probation without any investigation. So for you researchers who continue with these tapes and use them, get into the Palatine brothers, insist, write letters to congressmen and the Justice Department, and find out why he got probation and how come this international salting of millions of dollars is covered up. And of course, I'll be working on the Messerschmitt-Tilden links to the Alger Hiss and the John Kennedy assassination. One of the important things to remember about Alger Hiss, why he was framed, and I wrote that in my first published article, part of the article on how Richard Nixon came to power, was Alger Hiss was working to expose the ammunition people who were arming for World War II. And in the FBI documents, they have a chronology of Alger Hiss's work. From 1929 to 1930, he was secretary and law clerk to United States Supreme Court Justice Holmes. Alger Hiss was employed by the federal government May 12, 1933, and he was the principal attorney in the Agriculture Adjustment and Administration, and that's where John Apt also worked, in the Agriculture Administration. They must have been in the same department. Then Alger Hiss was on loan from August 1934 to 35. He was designated as legal assistant to the Special Senate Committee investigating the munitions industry. And during that period, he was on assignment from the committee of the Department of Agriculture. Alger Hiss was appointed special attorney in the Solicitor General's Office of the Department of Justice, where he served August 15, 1935 to August 31, 1936, while employed in the Solicitor General's Office. And his role was to find out who was rearming Germany and getting ready for World War I. And, of course, I've mentioned that he brought the book, The Merchants of Death. He was reassigned to the Department of State in January 47 to become affiliated with the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. And it was John Foster Dulles, the head of our State Department, and the brother of Alan Dulles, who was to form from the OSS to the CIA. They put Alger Hiss in that job and then called him a communist to discredit peace. They were not ready for peace. They had decided in 1943 to rearm the world, move the Nazis out of Germany and into different departments, and it was anything but a peaceful world that they were planning. And Alger Hiss's place in history was to bring various people before that committee and have them testify about their attempts to make World War, what was to become known as World War II. If you know the Alger Hiss story, one of the parts of framing Alger Hiss was a story that he received a Persian rug from a gentleman named Mr. Silverman, who later could be associated with possible communists, and to show that Alger Hiss's memory was not clear about certain events, this piece of carpet was supposed to be put in his car at a car lot one evening, and then he and Priscilla had used it in their home. What I learned through the Freedom of Information Acts from the FBI, dated March the 9th, 1949, that Abraham George Silverman, the same Silverman regarded as the conduit of this great Persian rug story that was as flimsy as the pumpkin paper films, was employed at that time by the Army Air Force from 1942 to 1945. He was head of the Analysis and Plan section of the Deputy Chief of Staff Material under General Bennett Myers. That's the gentleman that later went on to work for Howard Hughes. And it says that Mr. Silverman was the primary figure responsible to analyze productions of the B-29 bombers. Previously to Mr. Silverman's employment in the section that he was in at the time this report was made, he worked for a Colonel Charles Tex Thornton. Now, the FBI document says that Charles Thornton, Colonel Charles Thornton, now associated, this was at the time just prior to the charges of Alger Hiss, this is in 1949, was associated with used aircraft. Instead of saying H-U-G-H-E-S, Howard Hughes Aircraft, they said Charles Thornton, associated with used aircraft, worked with Mr. Silverman and General Bennett Myers. Now, the used aircraft, again, Jean DeMorenschild, involved in the Kennedy assassination, a close associate of Lee Marina Oswald, testified she came to this country through the Howard Hughes Organization, and that her husband, that she had divorced before she married George, worked for the Hughes Organization, and that her daughter was married to the son of the vice president of Lockheed. So the man that was responsible for the little carpet story that was to smear Alger Hiss, the Persian rug story, was a man with close contacts to the Air Force and to Charles Thornton. Now, Charles Thornton and Roy Ash allegedly took $43 million shortly after this from the used organization, the used aircraft, and formed Litton Industries, that later became not only the conduit of the CIA to overthrow Greece in 1967 and put in a military dictatorship, but Roy Ash formed the Office of Management and Budget, which is that dangerous group that could break up the states into the metro system that I've talked about on other tapes. So in the Alger Hiss documents, we see the Howard Hughes organization, Charles Thornton, and General Bennett Myers, as I say, the party that was involved with Howard Hughes contracts in the military and with the Hughes organization. And yet they used this Lieutenant Colonel Silverman for the story of the carpet that was given to Alger Hiss, this innocent Persian carpet that was given to him to use at his home, that they could smear him later and associate him with having a bad memory or receiving gifts from these particular people. The FBI document in the Alger Hiss papers, dated February 23, 1949, states that Felix August Inslerman, I-N-S-L-E-R-M-A-N, who used the name Felix, was one of the photographers that Whitaker Chambers used for his underground apparatus, and that a 35-millimeter Leica camera was found in Inslerman's possession and was sent to the FBI laboratory, and the FBI recently had access to the pumpkin microfilm papers from the House Un-American Activity comparison with Inslerman's Leica, and the FBI concluded that the two rolls of the pumpkin microfilm were exposed with Inslerman's Leica camera. These rolls were described in a laboratory report to the grand jury as Exhibits 47 and 48. The name of Felix, the man who had this camera, was referred to again in the documents, referring to Alfred Tilden and Mr. Messerschmitt and Felix Inslerman, the friend of Alger Hiss, also went possibly by a new name of Mr. Crane. And a Crane believed, in quotes, that Chambers said that their chief in the old days had been a Felix. And Felix was the predecessor to the Alfred Tilden connections, according to these papers. And Crane also said that it was the first name of the Italian was Guido that they worked with. So you do have this Guido and Felix and the Leica camera and the microfilm papers and Messerschmitt all in one parcel linked in these documents. What a can of worms.